available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com. Part of the 24/7 Sports Network, the USC site, more specifically. And together, we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things, formerly Pac-12 football. And we're off the rails already. We're live.
Are we?
On our YouTube channel. No special guests this week.
Oh, the only special guest is you and me.
Yeah, David and I, we're going to
talk.
And
all you out there.
Everybody, you're all our guests.
Babes in Toyland.
USC and UCLA, final deep dives. We've talked about every former Pac-12 program, a little deep dive in the offseason with the respective publishers from each of those sites. So today we'll do USC and UCLA. If you have any questions or comments for the show,
Pac-12. I got a question.
Yeah.
Can we all talk about my hairline?
Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I do.
Hold on. Let me put the... So if you're watching on YouTube, I will put the main David feed up here.
Because this is bullshit.
I can see it's like kind of glowing.
Yeah, no, can we... Let's just take a look.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to take off the
If you're listening on the podcast...
For a second. Look up here.
There's hair missing.
This is a lot of hair. I got a lot of hair back here. It's very thick. It's very fine. I've also got hair right here. What my daughter calls my forehead hair, which is just a great feeling. And then I got this strip here of basically baldness. It's like the parting of the Red Sea. It's what is that? Because I was promised something different. I was promised, you know, it recedes in an orderly fashion from here to here, and it just goes away, and I can live with that. You know what the problem with this is? I have to do maintenance now. I have to figure out, what am I doing with this? Keep the hair short? Because I don't just want a tuft. And it's not even a tuft anymore. It's wisps. Wisps, Ryan.
Like the top of Homer Simpson's head.
Yeah. What is this? Why is this happening? If somebody is a hair scientist, tell me why. Like, what is going on here?
I don't know. Could you grow the other part of your hair longer? Like, you have this short, I mean, the hair you have it buzzed. Like,
oh, could no. This could grow out like that.
Well, then why don't you do that and just, you know, comb
forward?
No,
I'm not combing over.
Comb forward. It's not over.
No, my whole thing is I don't actually care like about going bald. I want to do it in an orderly fashion. I want things to happen in their proper order.
Yes.
And that's not what's happening here. Or start here, expand outward. That's also an acceptable way to go bald. But this, no. Unacceptable.
All right. Okay, we're off the rails now. If we weren't before with the WrestleMania stuff, people liked. They said I'm very natural at that. I always was a huge fan of Randy Macho Man Savage, so you had little parts of that.
Oh, yeah. The Macho Man, Randy Savage, coming at you, Hulk Hogan. I'm coming for you.
Something like that. Maybe that wasn't very good.
I thought that was great, actually.
It's okay.
Do I just bick it? But then I got to do that constantly because, again, still very thick back here.
We're back. I would grow the top part thicker. It just like it doesn't
have
to come over.
Or maybe I just shave everything else and just let this grow.
Because it's thinner, I think it makes the other part. Or does it look more profound when it's longer? I don't know.
No, I think I got to keep it short.
What about they've got stuff that like grows the hair. Like if you just put a little bit
there. I'm not doing that. No, okay. No. That's a bridge too far.
Okay. But a bridge too far to bridge the hair from the back of your head to your
That's a bridge too far
hair.
As well.
to the forehead hair.
Yeah. No, I just would like this to not be here. But I also don't want to do the, like, just shave that. Because then I look like I've got, like, a nine head. Mm. And it looks like it's, like, I don't know. Maybe I should do that.
Chase blames Chip Kelly.
Yeah, I blame Chip Kelly, too.
In the chat. If you're in the chat, thank you. You're watching us live on YouTube. And like I said, if you have questions, not the questions David was just asking, but questions for the show, packlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. Go on the Twitter machine or the X machine at Pac-12 Podcast. And apparently Reddit is active again. They'll post in there every once in a while saying, watch, Ryan and Dave won't read this for months, which we did not. But you can go find our Reddit, Podcast of Champions. And I don't know if any new reviews on the Apple Podcast machine.
Not a single goddamn one.
That's terrible.
In almost a month and a half.
That's bad.
This is horrible.
We should check Spotify, see if we get some 5-star reviews over there. I don't think you can leave.
They do.
I think you can do ratings, not reviews. Ratings. Yeah, I think you can get rated.
One of the big drawbacks of Spotify, to be honest, if we're all being honest with each other, and we should all be honest with each other. In most respects, sometimes a white lie is fine. But if we're being honest, Spotify not having reviews, very poor.
Yeah. We had a comment. Let me hold on. Put it up here on the screen. Dog's Life in Portland. Grow the front portion long and moose it up. Ooh. Like a unicorn's
Ooh.
Horn.
Ooh.
Do you like that?
Now we're speaking. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Mark seems to be an identifier the same way. He says, and I agree, no, it looks worse growing long.
Okay.
It does.
So,
Barbara offers laser hair removal of the patch. Yeah, I mean, I guess. I could just laser hair remove the entire thing. Just go fully bald.
Would you like to be a bald person?
Look, whether I like to or not, it's going to be happening here pretty shortly, so I better get used to the idea. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. I think it's just keep it short and wait for it to start dropping like flies.
We got Destiny 21 Zodier, resident Stanford fan here, watching Dave talk about his hair. Felt exactly like watching the big game the last 2 years. Sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Notice what he put before big game there.
He had a the.
Yeah.
T-H-E.
That's right, baby. That's right, baby.
All right. We got that. Well, we got a fun show for you today. Well, maybe not.
Is it?
Is it fun already? I'm going to have you scoot that way a little.
So what if I don't want to?
You can just not be in the center of your screen. That's fine. There you go. I like telling David what to do. He hates being told what to do. He doesn't like it at all. Yeah, we got a fun. Mark says grow it long and do a giant comb over.
I could do it.
See, the comb over is one thing. It's bald in the top. Like, you're in the front. So I feel like you could just grow and have some bangs from that, and it just covers.
You've never seen what that looks like, but it's a horrible look.
Fair enough.
Horrible.
The tuft could grow up, as your daughter
the
says.
Tuft, the forehead hair, as my daughter calls it. She's like, why do you have hair on your forehead?
It's like a third eyebrow. For Halloween, you can put like an eye there, like, and then put that's your eyebrow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's how time has passed with her, because she can't remember that that's my hairline. No. Why do you have hair on your forehead? That doesn't have as much, even as much as it used to at the beginning of this show. I went back and looked at videos of our show from the first time we recorded.
Okay.
Much more hair there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Dropping like flies. Anyway, enough about my hair.
Yeah. We've talked.
Actually, no. I could talk about it for so long.
You could do a bunch.
Yeah.
We've talked about every program in the formerly known as Pac-12 thingy. Now that there's no more spring football games, I don't think there's really any other, and the spring sports are ending. I think all the live broadcasts for Pac-12 Network are going to be done. So I don't think there'll be much else for the Pac-12 Network to really do. And now we're just counting down the weeks until, was it July 2nd, I believe, is the end of everyone goes off to their respective conferences. It was weird. I was I did solid verbal this morning and, you know, talking about that. Whatever you're talking about, it's just like this the end of this era that we've been a part of for so long. I don't know if it's hit you and what the UCLA fan base is feeling like. It's just weird, though, just knowing that even the class of 2024, when you realize, like, they're not playing in the Pac-12, like, they're all in your new conferences, you know, like, Cal's class of 2024 is playing Florida State and Boston College, mm-hmm. you know, they're not playing Washington and Oregon. It's just weird. And I think in a, you know, whatever, a couple of months when this goes official and it's like over, it's just going to be like, wow, that's really done.
Yeah. You know, talking to all of our pubs over the last few weeks, months, however long this has been going. It's like just hearing how they're all projecting they're doing in their new conference and all that kind of stuff. It remains surreal. And, you know, we've talked about all the angles on it all for months and months and months. But I do think there's going to be a long adjustment period for everyone where they're just players, coaches, but fans, us, where you're just kind of, just looking at the schedules, they look absurd. Like, look at the schedule for Washington, and they're playing Washington State in September.
Yeah.
Look at what Oregon's doing with Oregon State. I mean, just all this different stuff where it's like, It feels improper. It feels like it was poorly created. It feels like it's wrong in some way. And it's obviously is in many esoteric ways, but this is the way it's going to be now.
This is the way.
Yeah. So, it's going to be weird, man. It's going to be weird. I wouldn't say excited for it, but I'm also like, well, maybe it'll be interesting to watch. No, I'm not. It won't be interesting to watch Indiana.
No.
No.
We have a comment from Destiny again. Ryan, you're a handsome picture of wellness. David looks like he's auditioning for the part of suburban Grizzly Adams at a community theater in Glendale. Or El Segundo.
I was in Glendale on Sunday.
I'm sorry.
I was at our cave room.
What is that?
It is for my a friend of my child's birthday party.
Okay.
It was an arcade.
Oh.
But you can rent it out for private parties, and they've got like all the games, like all the old arcade games, on like three machines upstairs that you can just switch the game.
Donkey Kong, Pac-Man.
Yeah, it was Galaga. Really interesting because like you've got all these like 7 and 8 year olds running around like. All trying to like jump in the like car machines and everything. And then you've got a bunch of like 40 to 50 year old people, like all upstairs playing, you know, original Mortal Kombat, original Street Fighter, Pac-Man, Galaga. I played some Galaga.
Galaga's pretty good.
Even pre my time. But I was playing Galaga's Galaga.
Galaga's more my time, yeah.
Well, we had an Atari because I have older siblings. So we played some. Old school
but
stuff.
But Galaga was like one of the arcade. Like
yeah, but cool there was a version. Ones. I want to say there was a version on Atari.
I think so.
Or maybe it was just a regular Nintendo. Anyway, it was a good time. That was in Glendale. Beautiful Glendale. Glendale gets a bad rap. Beautiful drive
just
up there.
The valley of just like,
Yeah, but you're driving through those like mountains and stuff up the two. It's not bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you get, before we get into the USC and UCLA stuff, Max Olson at The Athletic does a really good job. He wrote a piece looking at where all the players that got – that were castaways from Coach Prime and Colorado ended up.
Mm.
I think there was 51 or something. There, basically, the gist of the story was there wasn't a lot of dudes that went on to, like, you know, start at Power 5 programs or things like that. There were a lot, you know, they were a 111 team. It was more about, you know, some of the players just felt like they never were given a chance. They were, you know – Prime was going to bring in all the Louis and everything, and they never got a chance. Like, they weren't even able to, like, see him, you know, one-on-one in person and all this kind of stuff. So it was more about the way it was, you know, the way he executed it. You're going to come into a 111 program. You're going to have to, like, turn over the roster. And so that's what he did. it just felt like the bedside manner wasn't great. Then there were some, I think, probably aggregated quotes coming out of that story. And then Shador and Dion went after them. And there was, a whole big kind of mess. I don't know if you caught any of that, but it was a little crazy.
I didn't read it. I read some commentary on it. But I guess my whole thing is this stuff was known in real time, I think, in a lot of ways last year when he was cutting guys, that he was not doing it the right way. And yes, that sounds very like I'm a 60-year-old baseball fan, but like not knowing guys' names, like all that kind of junk. I mean, that was known that was happening because there were stories already out about it last year. The fact that a lot of them haven't gone on to like great success, this is where you get into some confirmation bias that I'm always like kind of harping on. And I don't know how much of it plays a role and how much of it is an effect. But this also happened with a lot of the guys Chip Kelly cut. And there is an element, because I know this from coaches, when a guy is transferring out, a lot of times the first question is, why is he transferring? Or why did he get cut? And then they're less likely to, unless it's like a big time guy who's transferring for a reason.
Yeah.
There's almost like they're a pariah. You know, they got to be really convinced to recruit you because there's this bias against it. And it's an old school bias from before the days of the transfer portal, but there is a bias against transfers in the recruiting market. So I think, I don't know, I just don't love that as a clear depiction of talent. And also, so you don't go and become a Power 5 starter or even a Power 5 player. Well, would Colorado be better off with you in the third string or not? You know, would Colorado be better off with you as a practice player or not? And I think the answer is, in a lot of cases, probably better off. I don't think when you're cutting that many guys, you're not just cutting fat. You're starting to cut into muscle. And I think now, look, you've got the ability to do that stuff. It's just, you should do it with some care and some regard for the people that you're cutting. And I don't think, in many respects, I don't think that happened last year. And also, just to forestall one of the other criticisms people levy now, these guys are getting paid, so you can just treat them like dirt. Well, I don't know how many of you have worked a job before, but I get paid at lots of jobs. And if people treat me like shit, it doesn't feel good and it's not the way things should be. No, simply getting paid for your labor is not a reason to be treated like a piece of shit. So, no, that doesn't stand up. You can be treated like a professional. Sure. You can be treated like if your job performance doesn't, you know, hit at a certain mark that you might not have a job anymore. Sure. But you get treated with human dignity and respect. And it sounds like that kind of fell by the wayside.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, I think Brian had a comment up. I can put it up again. He said, I just saw that Colorado had 37 transfers in and 44 out this year. Crazy. After the crazy year last year. I think the issue is, and like you mentioned it, if you did a little research and got to know some of the guys, yeah, there were guys that could you have developed them into Louis, into starting type of players if they stuck around and had some continuity and worked with you? I think you could have. But if you, okay, we're getting rid of all these guys because we're going to upgrade at every position. I mean, they brought in some really good players, but they brought a lot of guys that have already transferred out again, you know? So would you have just been better off keeping some of the guys that you looked at and evaluated and felt had potential, that maybe they're not the level that we want, but, or you bring in someone, you kick them out and you bring someone in that's similar and then they're gone too. Like a lot of the players that transferred in last year are already gone, like the majority of them, I believe. So I think some of that was like, well, could you have just got to know some of these guys a little bit and not cut them just because you got to cut everybody, almost like for a shock factor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you felt like you could have upgraded every position. It didn't sound like they did, that they brought in guys similar level, and then those guys end up leaving as well. We'll see kind of what happens, you know, this year. But a lot of the dudes that you kick the guys out, bring in a bunch of dudes, and a bunch of them are gone too. You kick them out. Like, well, you pick those ones. Why are they gone? You know, so that was just kind of weird. But I think you needed to read the whole article, not just whatever, some quotes that were pulled out. And I don't know if it helped Shador or helped Coach Prime to kind of go after these guys. Like the one dude went to Austin Peay and then to UTEP, you know, and it's like, it's fine. He's happy now, but he just felt like when he was kicked out, it was just sort of, you know, wasn't done in a really nice way and whatever. I mean, getting fired is never easy. And that's essentially what happened. But yeah, I thought it was a fair article kind of all around. It's like, yeah, you're 1-11. You're one of the worst teams we've ever seen. You're got to like kick a bunch of dudes off. But it might have, you know, the feeling was it might have went too far, especially the new guys you brought in. You had to kick a lot of them out or they left too.
Yeah.
All right. Let's, I guess we can just dive in. We'll go first with
USC Trojans.
Yeah.
USC.
Mm-hmm.
The Trojans.
Yes.
Of Troy.
Champions of the Holiday.
Where Bowl. Do people say USC is? You know, like UCLA, it's Westwood, right? Is USC just Los Angeles, or do you guys have a more local designation?
No, I think it's just Los Angeles.
Like, you don't say, like, on Hoover, like, on Fairfax? Mm-hmm. Like, what are we doing here? No?
Like, west of Figueroa? No, we don't know.
Fig,
like...
yeah. Fig Tech.
Fig Tech.
So USC.
Yes.
Famously, well-run program last year. Obviously, built a very strong culture, very strong team. That just through the slings and arrows of fate and poor fortune, went what 7-5, 8-4,
7-5, and then went 8-5. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But obviously, Alex Grinch moving on after that season to Wisconsin. It's big shoes to fill.
It's a big blow.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. How? Because obviously it's not a rebuild.
He was going to leave, so he's preemptively fired. He really was going
to leave. He was going to leave for an NFL position, but then he found a better one at Wisconsin. And it was just, it's a step up. It's a career move. We don't want to like, it's not that USC is a bad job. It's just he found something better to do.
Yeah.
But here's the big question. Obviously, it's not a full rebuild on that side of the ball. It's a reload. You know, how, based on what you saw this spring, how able do you think USC is to replicate its defensive prowess from last year?
Yeah, I don't think it's very likely to replicate it, which...
About 110th nationally?
Yeah.
Like, you don't think you can do that?
Yeah, what they want to try to do is replicate what the Bruins did last year, going from like 100 to in the top 20 or wherever.
But how are they going to do that? I mean, certainly they haven't. Look, it's unless you're bringing in like several of the key parts of that defense, it's going to be hard to just replicate what UCLA did last year.
So I would say if you look at UCLA in 2022, they were pretty dog shit on defense.
Mm-hmm.
The roster didn't really change much into 2023. What changed was they brought in Danton Lynn, and as you know, they turned it around.
But certainly he's still in Westwood, right?
No, no. He's now at USC, so he's going to try to do the same thing where you take over a dumpster fire of a defense.
Yeah, but he's
maybe
not
don't improve the roster that much and then somehow make it miraculously better.
But hang on. Hang on. But he doesn't have even like a couple of the same players that he had at UCLA. It's a wholly different roster. Not at all the same in any way.
Well, turns out there's a guy named John Humphrey.
Oh.
Who's got great hair, by the way.
Great hair.
Amazing hair.
Yeah.
Plays cornerback. Mm-hmm. And he came over. He's joining him.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's a guy, Kamari Ramsey. Who turns out it's like a really, really...
No, he didn't come over because he was like one of the best safeties that UCLA's had in, I don't know, 20 years.
Yes.
He probably stayed in Westwood,
no,
right?
No, he came over. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It was funny. I did a one-on-one or whatever interview with him, and I texted Dave. I'm like, so, yeah, what should I... He's like, nothing. He's just good. He's really good. Like, he's just really good. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've added some pieces for sure. It's a deep... The secondary is pretty deep. they're still thin on the defensive line. They could have lost Bear Alexander, but he stuck around. They did not really get big names in the transfer portal. On the defensive line, that's probably what the USC fan base is annoyed with the most. Mm-hmm. There have been some big-name guys that have gone for high dollar values, like to Oregon and to Oklahoma recently that USC was in on. But I think in general, you know, they bring in a couple of Oregon State guys, the Arnold brothers, Easton Mascarenhas Arnold. I interviewed him the other day, and just, you know, he looks like he'll be like the good middle linebacker for them. They still have Mason Cobb from last year. They hope Eric Gentry's bigger and can play some different roles. And they've been really ineffective at linebacker for years, going back before Alex Grinch. So they're hoping that that can kind of change. And yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot of optimism. One of the things, Dave, I would say, when USC would sort of like win off seasons, it would be splashy things like, oh, Bear Alexander is going from Georgia, winning a national championship, coming to USC. There was, I mean, not that there were, that wasn't substance, but there would be kind of a lot of like excitement and fluff. But like last year, they added a bunch of defensive guys, but they didn't change anything on the coaching staff. This year was weird.
Well, you want continuity. When you've got a guy as good as Alex Grinch, you want to be able to say, hey, we're going to run the same stuff again next year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they did. It didn't turn out as
did
they,
it turn out worse? Is that
it was worse. Wow. It was pretty bad. So it was kind of un-USC like to sort of do some of the infrastructure work behind the scenes, bringing in Lynn, who doesn't have a lot of experience, but his 1 year in college. The thing I liked about him was he did get it. You know, a lot of times NFL guys are like, here's my 3-inch thick playbook.
I thought you were gonna say 3-inch something else.
No. Playbook. And oh,
dude,
we got an emergency alert. South Bay. This is a test. Really, we're doing a podcast right now.
Stop it.
Testing.
Need your test.
Yeah, I think for him, he came in and was like, we only have 20 hours a week with these players. We have to do a system that they can get, you know, they can grasp, but doesn't appear simple to the opponent. You know, you make it look more complicated than it is, but it's not hard where USC players were like looking at their wristbands as the ball's being snapped because they're trying to figure out what to do. But I think upgraded there, you bring in Matt Entz, who was the head coach, you know, at the FCS level, won 2 national championships. He's your linebacker coach now.
Yeah.
Doug Belk was the defensive coordinator for Houston, and he's your secondary coach now. And then Eric Henderson, I mean, a guy that was the Aaron Donald's coach for the Rams, no college experience whatsoever, comes aboard, and somehow he's like the best recruiter on the team now. You're like, that's an NFL guy, but he's just got a lot of energy. So I feel like they did the infrastructure work. I think the roster is a little bit better, but like it's going to be more about scheme and, you know, just coaching these guys up and development, which they just didn't have the last couple of years. So was it like the flashy sort of offseason upgrades? And, you know, a lot of USC fans are just hopeful that this is going to make a putrid defense maybe average or maybe better than that. And if you had an average defense the last 2 years, I mean, you would have won a bunch more games. So
yeah,
that's sort of what the hope is.
Yeah, my my no bullshit prediction is that USC is going to have a top 50 defense this year.
I think that's fair. Which would be
if only because Alex Grinch isn't out there coaching the secondary anymore.
Bob says, Amber Alert for USC's defense been missing for years. Yes.
Yes, beautiful.
That was so weird to get an Amber Alert while we're like live on the thing.
All right, so defensively, I think we're both in agreement. Obviously, they're going to miss Alex Grinch and his acumen, his understanding of the game, his deep, deep feel for it. But USC's defense should improve, not because of Alex Grinch's departure, but because of other reasons. We both agree firmly.
Okay.
Offensively, now there's a gentleman. Now, I'm going to see if I just can pronounce this correctly. Caleb Williams, is that right?
Close.
Okay.
My dad, who just says words, like, and he'll just stay with it. He's like, Khalib. He's like, man, I love Khalib. He's going to be great. I mean, it's Caleb, Dad. I must have told him 100 times, and he'll call me, hey, wow, Khalib had a great game. I'm like, it's Caleb, Dad. It's not that hard. It's Caleb Williams. I don't know what you're like. I don't know what he's doing, but.
Khalib.
You go with Khalib.
He's moved on. I think he graduated or he's got a job now.
He got a job. Yeah. He was applying.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So he's gone.
Yes.
Exhausted his eligibility. Now
he did not, but that's fine. Yeah.
Now am I given to understand that it is officially Miller time in I can't call it South Central because that's got a pejorative now. That's why I was looking for a new terminology.
Oh yeah. I think they just say South LA, but it's just Los Angeles. I don't know. Or like the Figueroa Corridor or something.
On Figueroa?
The Figueroa Corridor, maybe.
All right. Is it Miller time in the Figueroa Corridor?
Yeah. They don't have a lot of depth there, but Miller Moss was a 4-star guy that's basically been a career backup. You know, like Jackson Dart and then Caleb, or would you say?
Khalib.
Khalib, as you had said. Yeah, he got his opportunity to start in the Holiday Bowl and threw 6 touchdowns and looked pretty good doing it. It'll be interesting to see. I think Jaden Maiava comes over from UNLV. I thought they might get 2 quarterbacks from the portal. And if Miller Moss didn't have a good Holiday Bowl, I bet you they would have brought in another quarterback. But, you know, Lincoln Riley said it sort of scared some people away when you see that the next guy. He looks like the next guy because he had such a success, in that Holiday Bowl. He's going to be running more of what the Lincoln Riley offense was sort of meant to be. We've seen Riley have a lot of success with different kind of quarterbacks, you know, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, whatever, then Caleb Williams. And Miller Moss is probably going to be more of a, like, here's what the offense is designed to do. We're going to, you know, follow the script and go along with that. It seemed like he did a pretty good job of that in the Holiday Bowl. Maiava, I think, has a bunch of upside, but probably not ready to be a Big Ten starting quarterback yet. He was the Mountain West Freshman of the Year last year at UNLV and shows a lot of promise, more athletic as far as, like, you know, moving around and stuff. But I feel it's Miller Moss time. And, I'm not too worried about if you're a USC fan, you're like, they should be pretty good on offense. Like, are they going to be a top 5 one with Miller Moss? Like, maybe not, but they're not going to be a 50th ranked offense. They're going to be, you know, top 20 or something. But Caleb Williams could do a lot of just stuff off script that was just insane. And that's why he went number 1 to the Bears. If you read, Albert Breer did a kind of deep dive into why the Bears took him. And it was pretty, you know, if you weren't impressed by Caleb Williams, before reading that, I think you would be afterwards. So losing a guy like that is, you know, generational. Once in a 30-year span, you're going to get somebody like that. But I think they have a lot of confidence that Moss knows the offense. He's been around the system for a couple years and should be able to come in and execute it. Probably less improvisation than what we saw from Caleb Williams. But yeah, we'll see. You know, it's a tough schedule. He's got a lot of tough defenses he's going to play. Big time teams. You know, can you do it week in, week out? We'll see. Like, Caleb Williams was just supernatural. It didn't matter what the situation was. He just was calm, cool, and collected. We've seen Miller Moss kind of be that way, but, you know, not in real situations where the kind of schedule they're playing this year is going to be tough. So, that's the plan right now is, you know, and Lincoln Riley said, if we had a game tomorrow, it would be Miller Moss. Not that Maiava can't make strides, but I think when they open in Vegas against LSU, Miller Moss will be the starting quarterback.
All right. So offensive line, the fulcrum of all offenses, USC lacks tackle depth, right? Doesn't have a great situation at tackle, and then still some uncertainty at center. Or is there a good idea now? Is it going to be Jonah Monheim? What's going on there? How's the interior of the line looking? And are they going to be able to be more run centric this year, or at least slightly more than they were with Caleb Williams doing his dealio?
Yeah, I think the offensive line is pretty thin. Year 1 with Lincoln Riley, they had some veterans And I think Riley was surprised as how good those guys were, like a Brett Nealon at center, just steady, you know, not a guy that's going to get drafted, but someone that can be a really good college center. And, you know, Jonah Monheim and Justin Dietich and guys that were just like, okay, these are the ones that can kind of take you in. And you brought in some transfers and it just seemed to work. And the offensive line played pretty good 2022. 2023, they did not. They moved Jonah Monheim out to left tackle. They moved Justin Dietich into center. And it just, the offensive line just didn't gel. The transfers they brought in weren't as effective. So, you know, Jared Kingston was okay. He ended up getting drafted. But, you know, besides that, not so much. And then, you know, they put Monheim to center. He's probably going to be an interior lineman at the next level. So he's not going to have to play left tackle anymore. They like Elijah Page a lot. He played left tackle in the bowl game. He's probably going to be out there. And they're kind of figuring out some of the other positions. But right now you're looking at like 6-7 guys and, you know, moving some dudes around. Maybe they bring in another portal guy. The good thing is they have recruited offensive linemen well the last couple of years and takes time for some of those guys to develop. But what Josh Henson, the offensive line coach, took over when Clay Helton left was pretty bare. Like they just had to kind of get rid of a lot of guys. But they've been bringing in like 4 or 5 guys a year, and like Elijah Page is one of them. So Alani Noah is another one that came in, and he might play. But I would say they're still trying to figure out the tackle stuff. They like Monheim a lot. He's the smartest offensive lineman they have playing center, so the guy making the calls. But they got to play better than they did last year, especially because you don't have a guy like Caleb Williams just getting away from the rush.
Right. Okay, but looking at the schedule.
Yes.
Obviously a pretty easy schedule.
Yes.
Nothing too concerning in there. In the non-conference, only 2 programs that have won multiple national championships. So that's fine. So neutral site against LSU, is that right? In Vegas?
Vegas, baby.
And then Utah State at home, and certainly Utah State hasn't had a history of some success at the G5 level. And then it's the first Big Ten schedule. What stands out to you here? And not to get into early predictions, but I'm looking at this and I'm thinking success is 9 wins.
I think that's a good number. If you look at the schedule, I mean, LSU, now they're losing the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, 2 first round wide receivers. You know, we'll see. They're going to be really talented. You know, at least you're playing in Vegas and not like in Atlanta or Dallas or something like that. You know, they end the season in Notre Dame at home. That's your, you know, 2 your big out of conference games. And looking at the Big Ten schedule, I mean, you open the Big Ten schedule at the defending national champion, Michigan Wolverines. You're going on the road to play at Washington, who was in the national championship game last year. The good thing is both those teams have, you know, completely had facelifts in the offseason. We don't know how good they're going to be. They could have both taken steps back. You know,
which one of at Minnesota and at Maryland is USC going to lose?
I mean, they could easily lose one of those M games. But, you know, certainly both winnable, right? Like, mm-hmm. If you're looking at the road games in the Big Ten, at Michigan, the Big House, obviously the toughest. But you're going to Minnesota in October, early October. That's not too bad. And then Maryland a couple weeks later. And then, you know, after that, in November, it's at Washington and then at UCLA. So it's not like you're traveling late in the season. You know, Rutgers is in the Coliseum. Nebraska's in the Coliseum. Wisconsin's in the Coliseum. You look at the teams that they're playing in the Big Ten, and they probably avoid the 2 toughest in Ohio State and Oregon. They don't play either of those teams. Now, you do have the 2 teams from the national championship game, but like I said, both lost their head coach. You know, quarterbacks, you know, first round picks, all that kind of stuff. Michigan's had a ton of guys drafted. They're still going to be really good, but it's a, you know, if USC takes care of their own business and they're not just like tripping over their own feet, yeah, I think you could win 9 games because you're probably more talented than a lot of these teams on your schedule. It just doesn't look like, you know, outside of, you know, some of the top teams there, like you can win some of those games. Now, if you lose to at Minnesota, you're not, it's going to be probably hard to win 9 games. But if you take care of those kind of middling Big Ten teams that you should, and then, you know, beat one or two of the really good teams on your schedule, then you can get to 9 wins. So it looks really difficult, but I think if USC is pretty good, you know, they can take care of business in a bunch of these games. So we'll see, but on paper, it looks like a lot different than what some of these Pac-12 schedules have been. You know, seeing Wisconsin, seeing Penn State coming to the Coliseum. I mean, it's like some big time games with potential to lose all of them. But I think none of them are just like the world. I think you'd be worried if it was Ohio State, the way Ohio State's had a crazy offseason. Oregon's had an amazing offseason. Avoiding those two are probably two you would want to avoid if you're in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it for me, I would say I think they'll beat LSU, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think they beat Utah State. They lose to Michigan. They beat Wisconsin. They lose to one of Minnesota, Maryland on the road. And then Penn State at home. That's kind of a coin flip. So let's say they're, I don't know, 5-2, 4-3 after that stretch. After that, Rutgers is going to be duty. And that's at home. Washington's going to be terrible this year.
You think they're going to be really bad?
Yeah, they've just got a lot of work to do. Nebraska is probably still in the come up. UCLA is going to have some issues. I mean, they could, that ending five game stretch, they could go 5-0 if they're not in collapse mode. Like if they haven't had a disastrous start to the season, I think those last five shape up as pretty decent opportunities for them.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of winnable games, but if they're not taking care of their business, they're certainly losable games too. Like there's really good programs, but not like world beater programs, you know, like where you're just like, there's no way they're going to beat that team.
Yeah. I guess the last question from me.
Okay.
Because I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around USC from an NIL perspective. And I think this is a common problem for a lot of people at USC and who follow the program. Where would you gauge it right now? How is it compared to who they need to be competitive with to actually win another national championship? We're talking Oregon, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia. Are they feeling like they're getting closer to that? And how much of their transfer recruiting issues, particularly on the defensive line, have to do with not having enough money?
Yeah, I think they've got a lot better. I think they've come a long way in the last year. Just the event I went to a couple of weeks ago, way more former players involved. Getting like Ronnie Lott to be like one of the keynote speakers got people excited. You're hearing that more big boosters are on board now. I think, you know, Jen Cohen, the new athletic director, embraces NIL much more than Mike Bone, the previous one, did. And I think we've seen this across the country where athletic directors are sort of reluctant to push people towards the NIL collectives because that would mean you're taking, you know, it's basically like, hey, instead of giving money to me, go give money to those guys over there, which ends up going to the players. I think Mike Bone wasn't quick to embrace that. Jen Cohen is. I think they push how much of a necessity it is more than a luxury. And I think a lot of USC fans were kind of thinking it was more of a luxury. I think they still need to get the sort of everyday fan, like the middle boosters or the just, you know, the season ticket holder people. But I think a lot of the bigger boosters are on board. Their funding is more competitive. And I think for USC, they are comparing themselves to the people that you mentioned, at least the fans are, like, hey, why aren't we doing as well as Oregon or Ohio State? I think they're not to that level, but they weren't competitive with much, maybe even a year ago. And I think they've come a long way where now they have a decent, you know, more than $10 million a year in funding for athletes, where before it was just a couple million. So I think they've come a long way, but are they going to throw a seven-figure number at a one-year defensive tackle transfer that maybe Oregon can? They're not going to do that. So they're going to still try to like spend money in a wise way. They'll be competitive, but they're not like what Division Street and Oregon are doing, or you know, places like Tennessee or Texas A&M where they're just like all in on this stuff. I don't think they're there. Will it be enough to kind of get them over the top and like win a Big Ten championship? I don't know. I think they can make the playoff the way they're going, but it probably needs to get even better if you're going to try to win a championship. The thing is that, you know, this changes every day. Pretty soon we're going to have in-house and it won't be outside collectives. But I don't think that's going to change the sort of funding that like an Oregon has or Texas A&M has where they're just dumping money into the roster. I think they're USC's doing a better job of it, but they're not, they're nowhere near like that kind of level. But I don't think any, there's not a lot of programs that can compare. There's a few programs that are just like money's just coming in. If you have Phil Knight as a benefactor, I mean, there's a lot of money you can throw around at players and it's legal and it's totally fine. I just don't think they have that kind of person there. And you know, so it's getting better, but it's not that elite, super high level. And we'll see if that, you know, if you can do that and win a championship. But like Oregon's offseason was great. Ohio State's offseason was great. You know, they've just made a lot of big moves, a lot of additions. USC didn't have that. They were, their upgrades were more on the coaching side and some players and stuff.
All right.
If that makes
It makes some sense.
Yeah. I think they're doing a pretty good job, but and the fans that are on our message boards are just, you know, they're pissed when Oregon signs a guy that they wanted. And it's like, I think USC's NIL efforts are a lot better. And sometimes people from USC are being critical of it. But it's, you know, they're not going to be able to throw that kind of money at a dude for 1 year. They just, they're going to have to spend their money wiser, I guess. And that doesn't make a lot of the fans happy. But, you know, you got to kind of pick your battles. And you can get a guy like that and it might not even work out. But, yeah, they don't have that luxury right now of just throwing money at dudes that are, you know, there's only so many defensive tackles out there. And when guys like Bear Alexander went back to USC or Jay Toia went back to UCLA, it makes the price go up for the guys that are still in the portal. So it became a big bidding war. And I don't, USC's not going to go in there winning a big bidding war, but if the player like wanted decent money and then also like to be in LA, then they would have shot. If that makes sense.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's funny. The Jay Toia thing, I was just like, I was telling people like, no, David said that's not how it's pronounced. Toia, like not Toia, but we like, it was always Toia before. I don't know why, what changed.
You're hung up on this.
He's back.
Yeah. Toia.
Oh, he said middling, mm-hmm. Not meddling. Did I say meddling instead of middling?
What?
Our Stanford fan. He says middling, not meddling, like Scooby-Doo kids.
To refer to?
I think I said, did I say meddling? I must have said meddling.
Middling means average.
Yeah, I think I meant
meddling
to say,
means messing around with ghosts in a haunted
Scooby-Doo
mansion.
Scooby-Doo kid. Yeah, yes. Yeah. I think I must have said meddling instead of middling.
Right.
Yeah. So apologies. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not ghosts. People dressed up as ghosts in a haunted mansion.
Was there ever a real ghost or was always like some?
I don't believe so. Maybe there was a special like Halloween episode that was real.
They always had great costumes in those things. You know, like
they really
did. Wow, they really looked like a swamp monster or whatever.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break. And we'll come back and we're going to talk about the other team in Los Angeles that's going to the Big Ten. If you have questions for either one of us, you can put them in the chat if you're watching us live. Otherwise, we'll get to whatever we think we'll want to talk about. All right, back in a minute, everybody. All righty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. How do we go 48 minutes already? What happened? Where did
there was
go?
A lot of hair talk.
Oh, there was a lot of
hair
talk.
A lot of follicular talk.
Well, let's just jump right into it. We got to talk about
UCLA Bruins.
Do we?
I think we do.
Okay.
We already talked about them before. Mm-hmm. Kind of we got the deep dive going just because they had a big change.
They did.
Not sure if you were aware of this David, but
familiar.
Deshaun Foster is the new head coach.
The new head coach.
Yeah, I forget where he was head coaching before, but he comes over to UCLA from that job. And yeah, he is now running the show.
Mm-hmm.
I've made some jokes about things you might have said off air.
Or might not have said. No one can prove anything.
True, which I will not make. What I like about this is the lack of, you know, former, you know, Chip Kelly, former head coach. I'm a big fan of you. I think you're on the fence.
I'd like to stick him.
How do we just not really giving a shit is the maybe a good way to put it. It just seemed like he didn't really care.
A strong inability to give a fuck about his job. Yes. Yeah.
Where Deshaun Foster comes in and there's a level of energy, engagement. He gets it. He cares. He's someone that wants to succeed, wants this team to do well, wants to do this thing where you try to get unsigned prospects to go to your school. Mm. Some people call it recruiting. Mm. He likes doing that, where Chip Kelly maybe wasn't aware of that being a thing as part of the sport. But it seems like in the beginning, it's like, wait, they hired this guy with no experience. But in the months since, there's a lot more optimism, I guess you could say. There's just because of the energy he's bringing to the program. Is that fair?
The way I'd put it, sure, call it optimism, call it all that kind of stuff. That's all fair. But the way I would put it, just to like kind of set the stage appropriately, because you don't want to have a situation where you set Chip Kelly as the bar. Chip Kelly's not the fucking bar. Chip Kelly, if he's a bar, he's a bar that's like 10 feet subterranean. Like, it's not hard to eclipse that. What UCLA is doing now is getting up in the morning and brushing its teeth. It's taking a shower. It's putting on deodorant. It's going to work. It's coming home. It's eating dinner. It's going to bed at the right time. It's not, they're not, you know, they're not setting the world on fire, but they're doing the job. And when UCLA has a coach who does the job, there should be some like minimum standard of success. And I think it's going to take a little while and we've got to see what it looks like on the field. But like how they're approaching the offseason right now is essentially, well, this is how UCLA should operate. They should recruit. They should have, you know, there should be 4 stars coming on official visits in May. Yeah.
What?
Why? I know. Crazy. They should have
like a dozen offers a year or something.
Motherfucking Chip Kelly didn't even have official visits in May. Until I want to say last year, maybe the year before, like he eschewed that opportunity. No, we don't want that. And then it was no official visits in season. It's like, when are you trying to fit these guys in? What is going on here? Deshaun Foster is doing his job. And so I think the results in the recruiting angle and in NIL fundraising should speak for themselves. It's all improved already. I think they'll start landing some guys, and I think it'll end up being a comfortable UCLA-esque class. I don't think they're going to end up with a, 60th ranked class or whatever the hell the last year ended up being. So, all that being said, Chip Kelly should have been fired in November, and at that point, they could have hired a sitting head coach. They chose not to do that. They opted for Deshaun Foster in February, and... we still have to be in wait and see because we still haven't seen a game. But as it stands right now, I mean, it's a breath of fresh air. I mean, he's breathing optimism and a little bit of, I like being a fan. Man, this is interesting. Somebody's not telling me to fuck off every time I come around the program. Cool. A little bit of that coming back into the program. And they're clearly doing their jobs. And we'll see how it all shakes out in the fall.
There's advantages when you have like former players coming in. I mean, what have you seen?
Well, not even just former players, former students. Like seeing Deshaun Foster out on Bruin Walk before the spring game, like handing out jerseys to students and like recording like a cute little video, telling them to come out and stuff. It's like, not only could I not see Chip Kelly doing that, I can't see Jim Mora doing that. Like, the only one, like, maybe Rick Neuheisel would have done that, but it's because they were students too. Like they were part of that.
You would have traded them for gloves, though. Here's a jersey. Can I have some gloves?
But they were part of that culture. Like they're part of like the actual like fabric of the campus. Like Deshaun Foster shows up at like softball games, at gymnastic events. Like he does stuff that he like absolutely positively doesn't need to do. Because I mean he loves the university and he loves being there and he loves every part of that whole experience and he has a lived history of being there. So that matters. And then from like just a coaching angle, the value of it in recruiting, I think, is particularly important if you're good at selling what it's actually like to be a student at UCLA, because it does fucking rock. Like, it's a really cool place to go to school. I mean, it's hard to beat Westwood. And there's a lot of cool things about being on that campus. And I think somebody who's actually been there and done it and gone to far more classes than I did in my 5 years can probably attest to it better. But I think there's a lot of value for it in recruiting. And then from a coaching perspective, maybe some, you know, but I think mostly it's from a recruiting and pitching it to people. And then also pitching it to students and alumni to come out to games. I mean, they got 11,000 to the spring game, which is about... Wow. Which is about 10,000 more, maybe 10,500 more than Chip got to his last spring game at the Drake Stadium. So clearly something's working.
Was Deshaun pissed about the prices at Diddy Reese going up? You know,
I haven't spoken to him about that. I think that will obviously be a bone of contention. Maybe that's something he addresses in the offseason. I always assumed Diddy Reese, we may have talked about this before, I always assumed it was a drug front.
It had to be. Right? It was like, why could you
There's
sell
There's no some- way. Like, how can you sell that for $1.50 or whatever it was?
Yeah.
Like or a dollar.
Ice cream sandwich was like $1.25 or something. Yeah. Like, now they're like regular prices. I went the last time.
Yeah, like, it's like $4.
I'm like,
yeah.
Son of no. a bitch. Like, yeah. It was better.
No, and you could get like a sack of cookies, like full dozen cookies for like, I think it was like $2.50 or $3.
It was something crazy, yeah.
It's insane.
But I'm glad he came anyway. So building out the coaching staff.
Probably maybe it's the legalization of marijuana. Maybe they were running that.
Oh, they couldn't do it. Yeah. So now they have to like change the meth or something, or
yeah,
charge more
gotta,
for cookies.
Gotta go much harder,
or charge more for the cookies.
I think they sprinkle cocaine on those cookies.
They're so good. I love that. Yeah. Let's go look on the offensive side of the ball.
Sure.
Eric Bieniemy comes over.
Yep.
Pretty high profile. What have you seen offensively? What are they going to look like?
Let me start here. Talent-wise, this is not a super talented UCLA roster. They lost a lot on defense and offense. There's some pieces. So Eric Bieniemy is coming in. He's going to run something pro-ish style. It's a West Coast offense. There's going to be tight ends doing their thing. He's even bringing in a fullback. Like, they're going to do some...
Fullback.
I think they want to be versatile and multiple and all that kind of stuff, but just they're not going to be going four wide a ton. It's going to be some inline blocking, you know, and some traditional type plays. We saw some fullback flares out of the backfield. Like, we're seeing some interesting stuff. But that's spring. They haven't installed everything yet. Ethan Garbers is going to start at quarterback. He was fine last year after he kind of reclaimed the starting job from Dante Moore. He's nothing special, nothing flashy, but I think he'll be competent enough in this offense. They don't have a lot of quarterback depth. If he gets hurt, there really isn't anybody who you'd feel good about starting a Big Ten game. Chase Griffin is the only one with starting experience. He's about 5'8 and is mostly worried about NIL deals. But he's got a lot of, what's the word, moxie. He goes in there and he has to throw with literally every muscle fiber in his body to get the ball in any kind of direction. But he's played credibly in the past, but not an ideal number two. Justin Martin, big, strong athlete, probably not ready yet. They're just bringing in a new transfer quarterback, just committed yesterday from Washington. That is DeMarcus Davis, but he's not a true transfer. He was a 2024 kid who early enrolled at Washington and then transferred out after spring. So he's a 2024. He just has already been through a spring practice at another school, sort of similar to Jay Toia at USC.
Okay.
So he'll compete in the fall for maybe the number two spot, probably more likely the number three. But they don't have a lot of depth. Offensive line, they've added a couple of pieces in the transfer portal since the end of spring.
Okay.
Ruben Unije, who was at Houston as a right tackle. He'll probably end up starting at left tackle for UCLA because they don't have a ton of tackle depth or tackle talent. And then Alani Makahele, who was a starter for UNLV, blocking for Maeva last year. He's probably going to start at right guard, which will push Josh Carlin, who was probably UCLA's best offensive lineman last year, to center, okay. where he'll take over for Duke Clemens. He spent the last week as the center during spring ball. And then the rest of the line is returning Spencer Holstage and Garrett DiGiorgio at tackle. I think they might try to add one more offensive lineman in the portal, but they're running short on scholarships right now. The best unit in the on the offense is probably receiver. They added Rico Flores in the offseason from Notre Dame. J. Michael Sturdivant returns, and Titus Mokiao Atamalala. He was out last year due to an undisclosed reason, but he was out all of the year, practiced, but didn't play. So you can do your own deductions. But he looked really, really good this spring. I wouldn't be shocked if he's the best player on the offense this year.
Oh.
But they've got that top three.
No, Sturdivant?
Sturdivant's fine. What we saw last year was he lacked consistency from play to play.
Okay.
Take plays off. If he can bring the energy all the time, he's an immense physical talent. But there's
for Cal Bear.
Yeah. And then Logan Loya, who was UCLA's leading receiver last year, I haven't even talked about him. So between that, tight end's a little thin. But really, I mean, the offense, I think if they get Bieniemy's thing, I think it'll be fine. I don't think it's going to be gangbusters, but I could see it being top 40-ish. I think there's enough talent. Across the board, and it's just a matter of that offensive line gelling in a new offense.
If we go to the defensive side, like maybe you can talk about some of the coaches he brought in there, but also, you know, with we already talked about Danton Lynn coming across town, he really turned that around quickly. You know, can the new staff kind of build on that, and you know, what kind of losses the Bruins had on defense? I know Latu Latu was the first defensive player selected in the draft, so it went all, was it 14 or 15 offensive guys, and then Latu Latu went, it was the first defender off the board.
Leatu Latu.
Leatu Latu.
You're so. Saying Latu Latu, like Nanu Nanu.
Leatu Latu.
Leatu Latu.
Yeah, that's just what
you got. You had a tough time with the Polynesian.
Leatu Latu. That's why I go to the Polynesian Bowl every year, so I can keep practicing. Not to be in Hawaii.
Latu Latu. There was some shuffling on the defensive side, but not too many big changes.
Okay.
Guys left. They only have four coaches on defense now. So they've got the defensive coordinator, Akaika Maloy, who is also going to coach linebackers. Last year he was the defensive line coach. Okay. So that's a promotion that Chip Kelly made that was extended by Deshaun Foster. So defensive coordinator, Akaika Maloy, he was on staff last year. The defensive line coach this year is Tony Washington, who was a GA at Oregon last year.
Okay.
So he's getting moved into that role. I think he was originally just going to be the outside linebackers and edges coach, but when the whole kerfuffle happened, he got moved to being the pure defensive line coach. And then they have two secondary coaches. Those are guys both returning from last year. Cornerbacks coach Cody Whitfield, who also doubles as a special teams coordinator, and then safeties coach Brian Norwood. So pretty similar, actually, from a staff continuity standpoint. There's three guys returning from last year's coaching staff. Only one newcomer, but the big departure was Ken Norton Jr. in addition to Dan Lynn.
Where did he go?
Pros.
Okay. He was NFL defensive coordinator for a while and stuff.
Yeah. And I think he just wanted to get back to that. So defensively, the big question mark throughout all of spring has been, how do you replace those edges? UCLA lost not only Leatu Latu, but Gabriel Murphy, Grayson Murphy, Carl Jones, and Jake Heimlicher. Jake Heimlicher barely played. Those four guys ahead of him all played.
They were real good.
And yeah. Those are the top five guys in the depth chart from last year at edge. So then you get into spring, and the sixth guy, Shea Bryant-Strother, bounces, like a practice or two into spring. So down their their top six edges from last year now. They brought in Jacob Busich from Navy, and they have Devin Ayupiu, who was an interior defensive lineman last year. He's now playing at edge, but they don't. They need bodies. They've added one, Sharif Say from Florida A&M. They're probably going to try to add another one, maybe two more. Again, scholarships are getting short, but they need bodies there because they just don't have a lot of pass rushing talent there. The interior of the defensive line will be strong, though. Jay Toia is really good. Keanu Williams is pretty good. Gary Smith, if he's healthy, should be solid. And they moved over Siali Tapaki from the offensive line, who's looks kind of like Jay Toia, so maybe he'll be as good. Who knows? So there's the defensive line, think of it. Interior should be good. Edge is not so good. So you can generally surmise maybe stop the run okay, maybe not pass rush okay. So just general rule of thumb. Linebacker will be totally fine. They've got a lot of bodies there, a lot of talent. That'll be totally cool. And then the secondary, they've had to replace a ton because USC poached a lot of their players. Devin Kirkwood's still there. He'll start at one of the corner spots. Jalen Davies is still there. He'll start at the other one. Safety is completely new. Brian Addison, who's, I think, entering his 19th year of eligibility.
I was gonna say, he's still around, huh?
He's at safety. And then Ramon Henderson? Henderson, I think, from Notre Dame. He's the other safety right now. They don't have a lot of depth at any of the secondary spots. They probably need to add a corner and a safety as well. They might not get to both in the transfer portal. I would say defensively, the big question is, how are they going to manufacture a pass rush? And if they have to do it via blitzing, that'll have the cascading catastrophic effects that it always does. I think it's going to drop down from being a whatever it was, top 15, top 20 defense that it was last year, to probably as low as top 80. I think it's going to be a big drop off defensively without that pass rush. But maybe they surprise me. I mean, they could be top half in the country. If they can put out a top 40 defense and a top 40 offense, they're going to be in really good shape to, you know, make a bowl game and do the whole thing. But that's a tall order for Deshaun Foster's first year.
All right. Portal wise, do you feel like the coaching change? How was the overall effect of the portal? Like, guys left that you kind of expected?
Not a single goddamn person left just because Chip Kelly left. Nobody had any care in the world about Chip Kelly.
Really?
Yeah. No, there was none of that. The initial retention was totally fine, and then frankly, I think most of the guys who left after that were the only guy who left that I think they were like, "Oh man, we really need him back," was Jay Toia, and they got him back.
Yeah, okay.
But everyone else, I think it was, you know, would they have preferred Shea Bryant Struthers stay so that they had another edge? Sure, but he was third string last year for a reason, and I think they would have, I think they may have told him, "Hey, we're going to try to bring in a bunch of transfers to essentially play in front of you." So I don't think there was anybody that left that was either a big shock or something that they were necessarily too upset about. I think from managing the portal, it's been totally fine since Chip Kelly left. The big problem was in December when they lost Danton Lynn and then John Humphrey and Kamari Ramsey in pretty quick succession. If they retained Kamari Ramsey and they retained John Humphrey and they had convinced, and who knows what a Deshaun Foster might have been able to do, had convinced one of Grayson Murphy or Gabriel Murphy to return, I'd be having a much different outlook on this team this year. But the secondary is replacing so much and they don't have an edge. Like, they don't have anybody who can be relied upon consistently to generate a four-man pass rush. And without that, it's hard to have a really good defense.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the schedule. Interesting with starting the season at Hawaii and then basically getting a bye week like right away, right? Mm-hmm. August 31st. And then the Big Ten season's kicking off, you know, right away with Indiana coming to the Rose Bowl. But similar to USC playing LSU, which is funny, but this one's at Tiger Stadium.
Yep.
In Baton Rouge. UCLA does play Oregon. They have to go to Penn State. They go all the way to Rutgers. They go to Nebraska. They go up to Washington. No Ohio State, so that's probably good. No Michigan, so that's probably good. Both Oregon and Washington are on there. Iowa is coming to the Rose Bowl.
And then famous Big Ten program, Fresno State, end of the year.
Fresno State. Yeah, that's a weird one. Why is that the last game? That's
kind of weird. I don't know, because they've stuck that bye week, I think.
Oh, because at the – yeah. And they're not playing – if you go at Hawaii, you get an extra home game, right? Like you could get – they're only playing 12, but I guess they could have got one more if they wanted.
Yeah, and they should have. I mean, that's a scheduling
mistake. Could have did a patsy game like September.
Yeah, you should want another game to have a chance to go to a bowl game to get another game on top of that.
Yeah, but
mistake. If you're going to go to Hawaii, you gotta schedule that 13th game. That's the advantage.
I don't like – I mean, there's back-to-back road games, but there's a bye week in between the at Rutgers, at Nebraska. Going to Penn State is just a pain in the ass. It's just hard to get there. Like, you physically cannot fly there directly from the West Coast because they can't land a plane that big. So there's, you know, it's going to be broken up a little bit. All the way to LSU. What are your kind of thoughts on and all the way to Hawaii? I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, that's fine. You're going to Hawaii. It's not like a chore, but there are some long road trips. What are your kind of thoughts over on the overall schedule?
I mean, it's a difficult schedule. Now, going at Hawaii, Hawaii's kind of in a pretty dumpstery state and has been for a long time. Not the state itself. The state of being for Hawaii is a little bit of a dumpster. So they should be able to win that. They should be able to beat Indiana. At LSU, that's very hard. Oregon at home, that's very hard. And at Penn State, that's very hard. I think the scenario where they are not 2-3 after October 5th, the only way that's not the case is if they're somehow 1-4. I think that's a very, very, very tough start to the season.
Yeah.
After that, things lighten up a little bit. Minnesota at home, that's winnable. At Rutgers, that's winnable. At Nebraska, even, I mean, I don't think it's super winnable, but they could do that. And Iowa at home, I mean, Iowa is always capable of just, you know, we're going to punt this way to a win and try to win 6-3. And you open yourself up to a lot of volatility when you do that. And at Washington, again, I already said Washington's not very good this year. They probably won't be. Still, it's a road game, and UCLA is probably not going to be very good this year. USC at home, Fresno State at home. I mean, if things go really, really, really well, they make a bowl game. And if things don't go so well, they're 4-8, 5-7. I think the line is set at 5.5 for wins for UCLA this year. That feels exactly right.
Okay.
I think if we're watching those first couple of games and things look really good, like they think that it looks like they've got their offense going, maybe I'll revise upward. But right now I'm thinking, I don't know which way I'll go, 5-7, 6-6, but it feels right there.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. It's one of those things too. Like we don't know because there's so much change going on, but if UCLA is kind of taking care of their own business, there's more games here that are winnable. But I mean, you got a team that's new coaching staff, long, long trips all over the freaking place. I mean, they're you know, if you lose a couple games you don't think you should, things can spiral, or you get a little momentum and things can kind of, you know, pick up. So it's there. I mean, I know Ohio State is good, right? No Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, I've made this point before on the show, but I'll make it again. Indiana, Illinois, Maryland, Northwestern, Purdue, Rutgers, those programs still exist. Yeah. Like, they still exist, and UCLA plays a good amount of them. You stick a lot of that on your schedule, you're going to rack up some wins. It's the story of Iowa's success. The top of the Big Ten has more elite programs than the Pac-12 did. But the bottom's got a whole shitload of Arizona, like a whole shitload of Oregon State, a whole shitload of like 2021 Colorado. Like, there is some bad team, 2022, I think. There's some bad teams in there, bad programs and bad historical programs that will never get any better.
Yeah.
You can make this work. I think UCLA can take advantage of that and maybe get to a bowl game.
And where do you think, you know, going into the Big Ten, where this program is now, maybe talk about the NIL situation a little bit. Like, yes, losing Chip Kelly when you did wasn't the ideal time. Like you said, it should have been happening in November. Things, but you know, you do what you can. You rally around what you got, and it seems like do it as good of a job as you can, go it in there. But you know, thoughts on going to the Big Ten and then, you know, the current NIL situation, which is a really important part of college football now.
Yeah. You know, going into the Big Ten, obviously, none of this is ideal. Chip Kelly probably shouldn't have been not fired in November. He probably should have been fired 2 years ago. If you were actually serious about going into the Big Ten with any kind of juice, any kind of idea that this is, you know, we're really raring to go. We're ready for this. They didn't do that. And so Chip Kelly was allowed to kind of languish and force the program into this kind of stasis where it never developed the way programs need to, especially ones that didn't have already a huge cheating apparatus. You know, for a lot of schools, NIL funding was just a matter of taking them from this set of books over to this set of books. Like, it's not... UCLA didn't have the apparatus of even boosters knowing, hey, my job is to be a bagman. Your job is to fund that building. My job is to be a bagman. A lot of other schools had that. And I think USC is running into that to a certain extent, too. So it's education of donors and student, all that kind of stuff. The kind of shit that a coach needs to help with. A coach needs to do that stuff. Coach needs to go golfing. Coach needs to go wining and dining. And it's really stark when you look at the comparison between the basketball program, which is currently top five, maybe top three in NIL.
Really?
Yeah.
Their payroll's up there.
Because Mick Cronin does his job.
Yeah.
And does it in a good way and does the donor relations stuff. Football hasn't done that under Chip Kelly. And Deshaun Foster's doing it. And fundraising has improved. But I wouldn't even say it's... What number did you say for USC? 10 million plus?
I think they're in that kind of range.
UCLA is not there yet. I think they'll get there. I do think I'm reasonably optimistic that with what they're doing, they're going to get this sorted. And I think the level of funding for both of those programs will eventually rise to where they are kind of historically. You know, USC's funding should be top 10-ish and UCLA should be top 20-ish. But it's going to take some more time. And so I think going into the Big Ten, they're going to have to do a lot of the traditional recruiting. I think they're going to have to do some really good player development, and I think they're going to have to strategically target and be willing to maybe even overpay a little bit for guys who fit your needs in the transfer portal every single season. And I think, you know, if they can get four or five guys each turn about the transfer portal who can make an impact and then also bring in classes of 18 to 20 guys in the high school ranks. Here's what I said earlier about going to school at UCLA, and I think it's true to a certain extent at USC. Guys don't want to leave. Like, even the transfer thing, like I would say from an impact standpoint, guys are not leaving UCLA at the rate they leave other schools. Like, and some of that is, well, a lot of these guys aren't great. But I think a bigger part of it is, like, if you're going to school at a place like that and then you go visit Purdue or you go visit Nebraska or you go visit, you know, one of those southern hellholes, and it's just like, I could go to school here, or I could go someplace where it's like just 73 degrees and sunny, like, I don't know, 240 days of the year. And I think they have to be given a reason to leave. And sometimes that reason is a whole shitload of money. And
yeah.
But I think more often than not, it's just, oh, I think I might have a better opportunity there. Well, will I? Or should I just stick here, try to work through it, and go to school in, you know, one of the best locations in the United States? And so I think UCLA and USC, to a larger extent, can still recruit high school with some degree of confidence that they'll retain their players at a greater rate than some other schools because it's a great place to live.
Yeah, I think if it comes down to just business decision, then you go to...
Yeah, if it's money, it's money. But I think for a lot of
I'm going to West Lafayette, you know, for whatever reason.
What I'm learning, being kind of tied into some of this stuff, it's not always, and it's not even, I wouldn't even say not always, mostly not just pure money. Like, it's money, but like if you're within the ballpark and then it's like, well, where the hell do I want to be?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'll tell the story later, but there's some stuff going on in basketball where it's like, wait, why didn't he choose that? Why is he choosing this? Really? And it's because it's UCLA. Yeah. It's a cool place to go to school. Not to do like UCLA exceptionalism. They got their own issues, but like it's LA. There's a reason your ass came out from Boston or whatever the fuck you lived.
I think there's inherent advantages to, you know, some of the USC football stuff, some of the UCLA basketball stuff, both ways, you know, all the different sports, just being in LA. You know, if you're talking about being a superstar in Los, it's better to be a superstar here than it is to be in like Lincoln, Nebraska. You know, I think if you're the starting center for the Cornhuskers or Florida State and Tallahassee, like there'll probably be a line of car dealerships that would love to have you like promote, you know, be on their commercials. Where in Los Angeles, they don't care who your starting center is, but if you have a star quarterback or, you know, they're going to get huge deals. Like they're going to be able, you know, like Caleb Williams had massive, massive deals that he couldn't have got when he was in Norman, Oklahoma. You know, that's just, it's just kind of a fact. So I think there's some advantages to that, but some of the high profile stuff can really help your teams and you just have that here. So there's still those advantages. But you have to be at least competitive on the money side. And it sounds like both USC and UCLA are kind of
working
up to that, where they weren't before.
Yeah.
And you didn't need it before. Like there was, you just kind of like, okay, whatever. I mean, the whole like Reggie Bush stuff was going on. It's like if it was Alabama, you would have had to pay Reggie Bush to go there instead of LSU or Florida or Georgia or something. It's like, it just wasn't the case out here. The kind of laissez-faire attitude that you have on the West Coast sort of made it so you didn't need like the bagman stuff as much as you did in other places. Now it's everywhere. Now you have to have that. Like it's just part of the deal because everyone can get it. It's not just a behind the scenes thing or, you know, in the far corners of the college football world. It's everywhere now. So you have to at least be competitive if you want to play that game.
Yeah. No, it's totally true.
All right. I think that's...
I think that's it.
That's all we got. Oh, Dustin, he did say that I didn't say, he said meddling in a comment. So he said I said it correctly. But when he typed it, I guess he got it wrong. So I just assumed the Stanford guy was correcting me, but he was correcting himself. I don't know if we had, I think we might have, oh, we had one. Oh, we have two questions, I think. One in the chat from Alex. While this is due to basketball stuff, are there limitations of what walk-ons are able to do and not do that prevent schools from going over scholarship limits by giving walk-ons, in quotes, larger NIL deals? I think now, they used to have, like, they couldn't go to training table and stuff. I think if you're a walk-on, you can do just about everything that you could do. But yes, we've heard this happening, that basically you're getting an NIL deal to pay for your school and then pay for other stuff.
So it really depends on who is the person getting their scholarship, not taken away, but who's willing to give it up in exchange for another scholarship guy being brought in. In the era of transfers, you also have to pay attention to who's a grad transfer and who's a regular undergraduate. Because like a grad transfer, for example, is living in graduate student housing, usually not subject to a meal plan, usually doesn't really worry about class schedule, earlier registration times, and all that kind of stuff, because they're taking a very specific limited set of classes anyway, and there's only a limited number of people allowed in the major anyway. So really what the scholarship reduction is there is just they got to come up with their tuition money, and that can be easily figured out via NIL. And yes, there's some other ancillary things that are even smaller than that, but I think you know, it's not always necessarily the case that it's just some undergrad who's having to get short shrift. And a lot of the walk-ons can eat at training table now. Like, all that kind of stuff is just the same for whoever it is. And, like, travel restrictions don't exist in basketball. So, yeah, anyway, there's a lot of different things and ways to think about it.
Yeah, and we get this a lot where someone's like, hey, Caleb Williams is already making a lot of money. Why doesn't he just walk on so there's an open scholarship? The one thing you have to, yes, he was making a ton of money. But if you've been around, like, rich people, they like free shit too. You know, like, if they'll catch a t-shirt at a game or, oh, get a, you're comping my meal. Like, they like that kind of stuff. You don't necessarily want to just have to pay for school if you don't have to pay for school. You'd rather, you know, I think a lot of it is just because they're the most successful player on the team. They're not going to like, I'll be a walk-on. So, you know, they're going to want their scholarship. There's an ego thing, I think, involved with that stuff too.
Yeah. All right, we've got one email.
Yeah, you want to get it?
Is it the one from Hank?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
West Coast versus Midwest. Hey, gents. Seeing as how you're my only trusted source of news, what the hell is going on at your campuses? Are these protests / counter-protests a marketing ploy to boost NIL or portal recruiting? Wouldn't it be so nice if that's all this was?
That'd be funny, yeah.
In all seriousness, how will the relatively conservative Big Ten Midwest schools handle their new liberal West Coast schools and vice versa culturally? Also curious about your thoughts on whose style of football will adjust to who. Love ya, Hank.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, the culture, you know, differences. I haven't heard, you're hearing mostly like, you know, Columbia, different, you know, like Ivy Leagues or different, more liberal coasty schools. USC's probably more conservative, was, you know, more conservative than like UCLA, but still it's a college campus, which is going to be, you know, more liberal in general. But
yeah,
I don't want Dave to say anything on this because he'll just get himself in trouble. But I was...
Yeah, I gotta sit on my mouth
in some way.
UCLA just went. I mean, online classes.
Yeah, it's
USC's trying to get through graduation. Basically,
it's on campuses all throughout the country, including the Midwest. Some schools have handled it differently. Wisconsin, I think they broke it up. They broke up their encampment basically the day it happened, and. Then sent out what I thought was, if you're going to go that route, probably the best worded way of responding to it, which is, we support your right to protest, but we're not going to have you do this overnight. You can't camp out. Which, you know, if you're going to go that route, that's probably the best way to go. The only thing I'll offer, because I do get in trouble if I go too far, is whichever angle you want to take on whether it should have been allowed or not, I think Gene Block handled it very poorly at UCLA. And I think there were two ways you could have gone. You could have broken it up immediately, or you could have protected it. But choosing to do neither, choosing to instead allow, you know, droves and droves of people onto campus who are not students to commit violent acts, that's, you're failing in your primary duty as the chancellor of the university.
And I think USC, there was a lot of criticism from Carol Folt as well. I mean, they're stemmed from, maybe sparked a lot of this, where their valedictorian had some like pro-Palestinian stuff on her social media. And then they decided to not let her speak. And that caused this huge, that's basically, you know, caused the biggest problem. I don't know if that's what started a lot of these campus protests, but it started at USC. They were quicker to sort of, break. I think they broke down two encampments so far, but Carol Folt had a lot of criticism as well. I don't know how the valedictorian stuff works, but apparently there was like 200 students that had the whatever perfect grades.
Yeah, and then so one is selected.
You just pick one. So yeah. It's like, if they pick the person, you assume that you're going to allow them to speak. And maybe they didn't vet them as much, and then they decide, okay, we don't want that person to speak. Like, well, you picked them. So there was a lot of criticism there as well.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because it's, again, look at it from two different angles. You can look at it from, you know, the lefty lib angle and say, well, they should allow her to speak, you know, obviously. But then you can also just look at it from the, like, be good at your job. Like, if your job is to be the public face of your university, avoid controversy.
Yeah.
Avoid these things. Pick a different kid. Like there's two different ways to go with that one. But again, it's just like own goal for no reason. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And that's, again, you're failing in, that's not your primary job. Your primary job, like the really important one, is keep your students in a safe environment. But no, like pretty quickly there, not maybe not number two even, but like present a good face for your university. And that's just failing that mission too. I don't know. I think Gene Block has a lot to answer for. He's retiring this year, but it's not been a good showing. Not been a good showing.
Yeah, I don't think either school, they did a good job, and it's high profile stuff.
And that's a lot of schools are not handling it well. Some, I think, are doing a better job than others, but I think USC and UCLA both kind of fell flat on their face.
Yeah, USC's now put their graduation in the Coliseum, which I think is tomorrow or something. I don't know, something like that. But USC's on the semester, so they're sort of like, this was kind of happening at the end of finals, and it was more like disrupting like what graduation would be because of the commencement and stuff. UCLA still got time to go, so like now they've moved classes to online. Yeah, so. Like with USC, I think they're probably just counting the minutes until graduation happens, and then students are gone. They could just be like, take a break. But UCLA, it's kind of still ongoing because of the trimester.
Well, yeah, and they're keeping them off campus all week this week. They've drastically increased the police presence on campus, and it's just, look, final little thing. And this isn't me casting aspersions at the students protesting, because if you know my opinions about things, well, you can assume. but again, look at it from two different angles. One, you support their message. They should be allowed to do whatever they want. Well, not whatever they want, but they should be allowed to protest. But the other angle is, and this is often what I was thinking when I was a much more conservative student on campus. Oh, well, people being annoying again. But college is the time to be annoying. It's the time to do annoying shit. Now, I think Gene Block probably could have controlled things a little bit better and kept him off the walkways for Royce and Powell. But it's the time to be annoying. It's the time to be irritating to other people. And, you know, I think there's a lot of attention on college campuses for a lot of provocative reasons from media sources and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's a lack of protection for 19 and 20 year olds to be annoying. It's the time to discover like what you actually think and what you actually believe and all this kind of stuff. And that needs to be protected. And that was not the case here. And that goes a lot of different ways, but people being annoying, you got to protect that too. That's important. That's part of the whole free speech thing.
College students being annoying, because this is what they do.
That's just what they do.
They're figuring out their shit.
Yep.
All right. Well, good. I don't think you got canceled or anything there. That's perfect.
No, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. So we're finished with our deep dive. We'll come back next week. We've thought about, you know, the future of the show, so we'll kind of like think about it some more, come up what we're going to do. And do that probably on the next show. Does that make sense? Should we do that?
Makes sense.
I like it. Why do I ask you if that makes sense?
You should always ask me if it makes sense.
Okay. Does it make sense? Does it make sense that we're going to wrap up the show after an hour and 30 minutes in May, talking about a conference that doesn't exist anymore, but here we are. This is what we do.
Here we are.
That's going to wrap it up. David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.